Welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for if not for the curse of geography. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Anthony Askew.
And today we're joined by Greg Driver from Off of Ace Comicals.
Hello.
Hello, Greg. Welcome back to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, where once again, we're going to travel back in time. But for you two, you're traveling back to the very same year within months of each other. Thankfully, like weirdly, like both with shows which start on weird dates, they're not starting on like the normal time that an anime season starts. So we have got a bit of variation in other things we can talk about. So I have spotted a problem here. Let me just move that over to there, and then I can see my notes and my screen. So I'm talking about Zillion is my pick today. Off the back of the success of the Photon Laser Tag toys in America, Sega produced their own light gun toy, Super High Speed Ray Gun Zillion, released in 1986. Then in 1987, an anime produced by Tatsunoko Productions aired on MTV in support of this toy, and also in support of Fantasy Zone, because the character of Oppa Oppa from Fantasy Zone acts as this show's robot mascot.
Oppa Oppa.
It's like the little aeroplane on feet with arms. He's in the very first episode. Not sure he gets any lines, but he's hanging out with, I believe, the character's Dave.
Oh, Dave.
Yes.
Dave. Okay. Good old Dave.
He's the engineer / pilot. We'll get to Dave. And we also get to the anime character with the most Canadian name I've ever heard. And the series ran for 31 episodes plus 6 repeats branded as masterpieces. And was followed...
Masterpiece?
Yes.
I mean, I like this, but masterpiece.
Well, compared to the other two shows we're talking about today, this is a goddamn masterpiece.
Whoa. I want to say right now that I think this is the closest we've been to three shows that I'm torn between the choice of. Let's just get that out in the open.
You're mad.
Seriously.
I know which horse I'm backing in this. Because my main problem with this, the gun that you're talking about, the light gun for the Master System, I know it as the light phaser. Because that was the first thing, as soon as I started watching this in prep for this show, I was like, I've seen that somewhere before.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah. But the most irritating thing about it is the actual Zillion games, which I have actually played, again, unknowing what they actually were or what they were anything to do with, because they're just side-scrolling platformers for the Master System, so it's just like a shooter side-scroller. But the gun, the light gun, doesn't even work with the games.
No, I think the light gun is probably old stock of the laser tag toy that this is selling, just repurposed for the Master System. Let me see if this will work. Is this going to work? Is this video going to play for me? And now, have I set the sound up correctly so anyone watching can actually hear the video? I have not set the sound up correctly, so they're just hearing silence. Which I guess that saves me from the copyright infringement.
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially the toy, you get the gun and the power pack that the characters in the series have, and also the little triangle thing they have on their chest, which is the target you shoot with the gun. I said, I'm familiar with it, same as you, as the Master System gun, which makes me think they just use the same mold for both of them.
It is definitely the same mold.
You don't fix a ticking clock, though, do you? It's a perfect designed weapon.
But the Master System gun itself and the games, the Zillion games, came out around the same time, and I'm just thinking, like, they completely missed a trick. If they weren't making them phaser compatible, and this whole show is built around this phaser design.
Yeah.
I've got a question about the video you've just played. I know this is terrible for a podcast, but
that's fine.
Where's the eye in the eye in Zillion?
I think they would have appeared more clearly.
Oh, they get shot on maybe.
Yeah, because I think you just see them faded. They're like electrical lightning bolts.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I wonder if the VH, whoever was copying off. I mean, it's pretty good quality, whoever ripped. Yeah, yes. There's another advert you can find on YouTube for the toy as well. Yeah, I do know what I've done with the audio there. I've basically, the stream has only got our audio, not any of my desktop audio, which is the correct thing to do until you get the bright idea at the last second to add a video to the stream. Okay, the five episodes had a dubbed Streamlined Pictures release, and this led to clips being featured in the Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson's Scream music video.
Oh! That's our impression of the song, but I've, I know the song and the video very, very well.
Yes. It feels like the song that Michael Jackson wrote, because people are getting at him, but also because he'd seen the opening to manga VHS tapes. And also, it is sampled, the Streamlined dub is sampled on Del the Funky Homo Sapiens track Cyberpunks, which can only be, as far as I could tell, was released on this compilation album off of the cover of a magazine called Strength Magazine. I assume it was from whatever sessions for the 1999 album that had got other anime-themed tracks on, such as Proto Culture. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think it might be on another compilation somewhere. You could maybe have to dig it out, but someone's put it on YouTube if you want to hear it. And you can currently get the series on Blu-ray/DVD/digital if you're in a different region from the region we live in. We can't get it.
Why does that box look so... Is it intentionally
looked... intentionally trying to make it look like worn out... You see? Is it?
I'm not proud of it on my shelf, but
no.
If you pick it up in the shop, you'll think, oh, I see what it's doing here.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like that. I just feel like show the series some respect. Make it look like a modern thing. give it a proper bit of polish.
Because I thought it was fake at first. I thought somebody had, I don't know, grabbed the VHS and just slapped on that Blu-ray strip along the top.
It's this weird thing, which I feel like is a thing that people who weren't... or people who don't really remember the 80s make things which they're trying to invoke the 80s look like the worn-out thing they found in the 90s, as opposed to
how it was initially released. It was new once, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You see that an awful lot with like packaging for like cheap vinyl toys. And whatnot, like these pop vinyl things where it's like, look, nostalgia, it looks like you found it in the attic.
I've not seen any of the Funko Pop, not that I look at them, but I've not seen any of them do well, that.
You don't want them staring back at you with their cold-dead eyes, do you?
Yeah. I don't know so much about Funko, because they have that very standardised packaging.
Yeah.
But, like, I know that, like, some, like, toy companies have done it.
Yeah.
I've got a Godzilla figure on my shelf that comes in a package that's kind of meant to look a little bit tattered.
As it's available for Funimation, if you are in the US, you can also watch it streaming. You can watch the first four episodes without signing up to Funimation. You will have to watch the same advert over and over again, encouraging you not to bring your phone to the dinner table. As I did when
I used
my VPN to watch it this morning. But this is what they say about the first episode. Late for his new posting to the White Nuts team, JJ finds himself caught in an attack by the invading forces of Noza. The rest of his team is sent to stop the attack using a set of three mysterious guns named Zillion. So, I was not able to watch this on April the 12th, 1987. Instead, what would have I been watching? As I know, the pair of you, would you neither have been born in 87?
I'm December 87, so I'm...
End of July, so no.
Oh, I don't know when your birthday is, because it's the same day as mine.
Of course. Forgot about that.
Okay, so let's see what I would have been watching. Well, it's a Sunday, so it was very little on, so I only found two things that I would have watched. Partly because I couldn't find any ITV listings for this day. On BBC One at 20 to 6, there was the Animals Roadshow with Desmond Morris and Sarah Kennedy. And let me see if it tells us on the BBC Genome exactly what was going on in this. I remember watching it. I do not remember what it involved. I think it was like a magazine program about animals. It starts with, will the eagle return to the south of Britain? How did the Ratter of the Mills become the princess of the dog world? What made Dainty the roe deer take to the bottle? So apparently they're in Doncaster today.
See.
Well, there we
go. It's not what I expected. The initial thought of Animals Roadshow was like snakes, lizards, like, you know, look at these creatures, not dogs and cats. And I'm a dog lover and cat lover, but you know.
An eagle, a
deer. I guess so. An eagle's cool.
And the other thing I noted was the Russ Abbott show. Now, I don't know if this particular episode is on YouTube, but there are a whole bunch of 1987 episodes on YouTube. And I watched a little bit of it, and I have to say, it kind of held up. There was the opening sketch of one was him in a casino, and he was explaining like how much money he'd lost. He just lost again, and he pulled out a gun, and then the character that... Les Dennis was playing. It's like, don't do it, don't do it. It's, I'm not going to commit suicide. I mean, I'm going to rob the casino. And then he robs the croupier, and then robs Les Dennis as well. But then it's like super quick sketch. It probably took me longer to explain it than the actual sketch did. But yeah, no, it was good family fun, as far as I could tell from the little bit I rewatched. It was the series where it was Songs of Joy and Tears of Laughter was the theme song that he was singing himself, because this was around the time of his pop career. Russ Abbott was my gran's favourite. She had his album.
God, super fan.
She was, yes.
I don't know much about Russ Abbott, really, other than hearsay or like someone saying his name who's a... like older than me.
I was going to say, if you saw him, you'd probably seen him on Last of the Summer Wine.
Oh, yeah, he looks familiar. And I'll tell you who he looks like. You know the dude off the Strictly Come Dancing, one of the judges? Oh, what's he called?
Is it Les?
I think it is Les.
Len. Isn't it Len?
Len.
Lenny. Len something.
I don't think it's Lenny.
Len Goodman.
Len's
Len Goodman.
Man, I think.
Is it Len Goodman?
Yes. Len Goodman, yeah.
Yeah.
Good Len's man, yes.
It's because I'm looking at this Russ Abbott show synopsis, and it says it had Les Dennis on it. That's why. Yes.
But they've got a very similar happy old man look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've both been angry in their careers, but on the whole, they're happy.
Yeah,
that was about it. UK number one was Let It Be by Fairy Aid.
Let It Be.
This was a charity record that the Sun had put together for the families of the people who died in the Zeebrugge disaster.
Mm. Is that Kate Bush on that cover
as
well?
That is Kate Bush on that cover, yes. I believe the Sun put it together because they'd given away loads of cheap tickets for that particular cruise, travel. I don't know what you call it, going across a ferry. I don't like to get on a boat, to be honest. and obviously this is before Hillsborough, so you've got people from Liverpool actually willing to be on something Sun-related. But enough of that. Let's get to Zillion, Episode 1, Codename JJ. Our director is Mizuho Nishikubo, whose other big show, I think, around this time is Miyuki, which I think might be a little too early unless we find somebody older than me, but that seems impossible. the literary composition is by Mayori Sekijima, who wrote Saber Marionette J and Samurai Pizza Cats. The setting and this particular episode screenplay is by Sunehisa Ito from Galvian and the creator of Sue Cat. I'm hoping that one is out of my wheelhouse, because that's another Knack show, so it's going to be dreadful. character design, animation director is Takayuki Goto, who's probably best known for their work on Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, and Kuroko's Basketball.
You can see it
actually. That was the most pleasant surprise I had this week, was watching this episode and going, wow, this looks great. Whether it looks great for the entire series, no idea, but this first episode is a great looking first episode. We've got Toshihiko Seki as JJ, who you may know as Duo Maxwell in Gundam Wing, Iruka Umino in Naruto, or Momotaros in Kamen Rider Deno. We've got Kazuhiko Inoue as Champ, who's also from Naruto. He's Kakashi Hakate, and he's also Inspector Shiratore in Detective Conan. And the late Yuko Mizutani as Apple, the voice of Mihoshi in Tenchi Muyo, Pinocchio in Blackjack, and Sora in Digimon Adventure. And our opening theme is Pure Stone. Our ending theme is Push, and they're both by Risa Yuki. Her career spanned 85 to 89, and as well as providing three songs for Zillion, they changed the ending theme for the last third. She also sang an image song for Legend of Heavenly Sphere Shirato.
The opening and ending as well are both big tunes, so you should listen to them because they're great.
Which was another Tatsunoko show from this period, 89 though. Right, what happens in this episode? Let me tell you. We open with that first great opening. We see a load of alien landscapes and our main characters, our three leads, but also like all the supporting cast show up as well. The theme tune does the quiet bit, loud bit that you'd think grunge invented, but no, it was mid-80s Japanese anime themes. And we've got guns, we've got mecha, we've got motorcycles that turn into armor. This is everything it's promising you. And then, because we still remember Star Wars, even in 1987, we get an introduction explaining what's going on in this science fiction world. It is the year 2387 AD, and humanity has expanded to the stars, and we're on planet Maris, the second Earth. Everything's going fine until the Noza turn up, space invaders determined to create their own galactic empire.
Yeah, great.
And then we like focus down onto the planet, and there's this guy on a bicycle bicycling through a desert. And we see like a little squirrel who is like a squirrel mole, but rather than burrowing with its paws, it has a drill on the end of its squirrel tail.
You missed out the guns from God bit, and that is if God is a Japanese multinational video game company.
Yes. Yes. He's cycling on this planet, and then we check in with the other main characters where we see Apple is training and Champ is negging her while she's training while he plays with a toy robot. you only got 98.5%. That's not good enough for my team. It's terrible. I've got a woman on my team and the other guy's not even here yet. Then we check back in on the other guy, and the squirrel who we saw has wiped out his bike and he's even eating his snacks. And he's getting annoyed, but then he sees, oh, there's a spaceship about to be launched. Hey, isn't that Lania base? So he's looking forward to seeing this spaceship go up. I thought it was too close for a while, but then it does reestablish the shot, and it's like, okay, no, he's safe. He's not going to be blasted into oblivion because he's wandered onto a rocket launching site. But as it's taking off, the Noza attack. They launch a whole load of missiles towards the base and the spaceship, almost hitting JJ as he's watching. And it's a full total attack by the Noza on this base. So the head brass get in contact with Gord. Now, the guy I said who's got the most Canadian name I've seen in anime. Gord, you've got to launch white nuts at once, because like, oh, you just formed them today. And one of them's not here yet. No, you must take those guns and also explain that if these guns fall into enemy hands or you can't safely leave, you must destroy the guns. The guns must also not fall into the enemy hands. Because it's not so much they want them to go and save the base, they need to send them to recover this circuit board that one of the astronauts has got. Which was on the ship, but they don't know the astronauts got it.
Some ultra top secret something chip or other.
Yes.
Yeah.
We find a child trying to help a dying astronaut, and the astronaut says, "Child, take this circuit board. Get it to keep the noses hands off it." And then one of the noses shows up, and they're like these guys in like battle armor with like a no type mask. I was like, ah, that's why they call it the noser. And the kid is ready to beat the hell out of this guy carrying a laser cannon, but they are saved by JJ and his bicycle. Meanwhile, Dave, Champ, and Apple head off. They've got a tank which goes into a spaceship, and then they can drop the tank off, and then they can come out the tank on their motorcycle and sidecars. As they're doing this prep, meanwhile, loads of people at Lanier Base are getting killed. There's like a big old sequence of things blowing up and children getting killed.
Great. It looks great.
Yes. I mean, as I was watching this, I was like, there's barely any, there are some robots that you know have got like some like small mecha along with their armored guys. But I was just thinking, like, of all the mecha shows we've watched for the anime that it makes, this is the one which has had the best first episode. And it's not really a mecha show. And it's, well, it's a mecha show, but the mecha's a toy gun. It's not a giant robot. But then JJ and the kid are here. They manage to save a child. And they have a bit of a run around with the noser. They end up on a solar dish. Where they think they're safe, because these solar dishes can take a hell of a beating. Well, they can't take a tank firing massive blast straight through. But luckily, the eclipse is about to happen, and so they'll have to readjust their sensors. And that gives a chance to slide down the solar dish into a truck full of energy cells. Then I'm going to swing the energy cell truck under the tank, and then we're going to blow it up with the gun we've got from the astronaut. And then he finds out, out of ammo. Oh shit, kid, we're doomed. But then White Nuts arrive and save them. And as they're being saved, JJ looks at Champ's gun. No, Champ is about to grab his gun. He can't find it. JJ has already grabbed it. And he's like standing up on the sidecar. And he's like, "You're an amateur." And JJ's constantly going, "I'm not an amateur." He fires the zillion, and it's basically evaporates one of the mecha.
That's a great bit. Because I wasn't sure what was going on at first, because I thought it somehow like teleported it somewhere, or phases out.
That's what I wonder, whether there is something else going on there, given that they've got some weird space guns that they don't fully understand. But luckily, they brought a spare, so Apple throws Champ the spare gun. They've all got guns now. JJ still wants to persevere with his original plan and gets the energy cells underneath the tank, blows it sky high, but he's so close they think he's dead. But he's not dead, he's just a creep, and he's rubbing his face in Apple's breasts.
Ruined it. I was liking JJ. Took one step too far.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of glossed over the fact that that little kid took out one of the noser with an enormous lump of steel that's about three times the size
of
this.
Yeah, that first noser, yes. Because, yeah, JJ is about to get got. And that noser, she does save him.
With a huge lump of steel that's about four times the size of her. And then, like, after that, like, she's got nowhere near the strength she had in that one little bit.
She does pretty well for a... Well, I wouldn't say a toddler, but a very young kid. She holds her own.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only series will be one more episode. Much later on, she's not a regular member of the cast.
Does she get killed off? Or
no, I think it's just a follow-up episode much later. Which also means, did the dog die? The dog seemed to go missing during the chase.
Nah, can't have done.
No. He went off and he went off and had his own little side
dogs.
Yeah. In Nagrabushi Gin, but in space kind of thing.
Yeah. The kid also steals the gun off JJ at one point as well. But
she tosses it around like it's made of polystyrene.
They're space guns.
She chucks it. Yeah, but they're not going to be light just because they're space guns.
Have you ever held a Master System
space gun
phaser? They're incredibly light.
Yeah.
These little bits of plastic.
Yeah, I definitely felt like the point where she has the gun or the astronaut's gun, but the other gun, not the zillion, is definitely trying to like say, "Hey kids, this could be you if you buy the toy." they've also got like scouters before scouters, I think before scouters. Mm. Yeah, it must be before scouters.
Was there an action figure line for this?
I didn't see. I searched for the. I think I only searched for the toy's name, not the anime's name, in terms of commercials. So I didn't see. I'd imagine so, based on the fact that he was playing with a toy of the armored motorcycle that we see in the opening credits.
Yeah, and that plane looks incredibly cool, where the tank fits into the back of it, and you've got the three seats that spin depending on who's piloting. Like, that looks pretty sick. I would have loved one of those as a 10-year-old kid.
As a 30-year-old man.
Yeah. Love it.
I'm trying to see. Yeah, if I put in commercial, I'd just get adverts for the video games. Not any toy adverts, I don't think.
Those video games, man. I'd have been so disappointed. If I'd watched this anime and I'd be like, okay, I want this for Christmas. And then Christmas Day comes and I've got the Zillion Master System game and the gun and I'm all set to play it. Because like how things used to work back then when we were kids as well, like the rumour mill for video games, because we didn't have access to the information we have access to now. You just had your video game magazines and whatever your mates in the playground were saying. So the rumour mill would be rife because they're using this gun in the anime and they'd be like, okay, so I bet the video game's going to use this blaster. I bet it's going to be amazing. And then you get it and it doesn't even work with the blaster and it's a side-scrolling shoot 'em up.
I'd have
loved it. But of course, some kid at school got it working.
Yeah.
See, I think at the time, though, people would be fine because people loved side-scrolling shoot 'em ups. I know I did.
I know. You would have loved it, but you would have been like, well, you'd have expected the gun to work with it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what order they came out in, but...
Mr. Trick, Sega, you missed a trick.
But knowing how good I am at those light gun games, maybe I'd have been happy that it didn't have the light gun.
Yeah. And the designs of the noses as well, they were great.
Yeah, like, they're a brilliant villain.
Yeah, alien, semi-organic looking. Like
one of their little mech companions looks badass. Like a
I know.
Spidery looking thing.
Yeah, all round, this was one of the most pleasant surprises I've had doing the anime they didn't make us. So maybe that'll be my next import Blu-ray purchase.
Ooh, I hope the box is all scuffed.
I don't want printed on scuffs, I want real scuffs.
Yeah. It gets to the door and Brian opens it and he goes, it's not scuffed enough, so he... Socially distancing, puts it back outside so the parcel force guy can kick it around a bit before giving it him.
Well, he just needs Hermes to deliver it and it'd be sorted beforehand. Yeah. You might have to climb on the roof to fetch it, but... Righty-ho, that was Zillion. Now we're going to talk about the very next thing, which is... I think I mistakenly called... Tenshigelion. I was thinking of dual parallel, whatever it's called. That was Tenshigelion. This is not Tenshigelion. I do apologize.
Yeah, you set me up for disappointment.
I did. DTA Tron is a science fiction anime series produced by Sunrise for Fuji TV. The idea is credited to the nebulous identity Team Atron. And apparently no one has been curious enough in the ensuing 22 years to find out exactly who was on this team. two manga adaptations ran in Monthly Comic Dragon. That one did finish. It had a different ending to the anime and sped things up. And Monthly Dragon Junior, which just got cancelled. It never got to have an ending. And once again, this is a late night boom show, airing as it did at 26:45 or 2:45 for the 24-hour clock inclined.
26:45.
Yeah, that's like how the Japanese do their listing. So if it's basically saying it's very early. You're not like it's basically assuming you're staying up late to watch it.
Okay. Yeah.
So it counts.
Not
for the
that you're in
previous,
a parallel universe.
No.
Or,
so it counts for the previous day's ratings. It's not assuming you're going to bed at 10 and then going, oh, it's 2:45. Better get up. I've got to watch my cartoons.
Some of us would.
I'm surprised it's in that slot. I don't think it requires to be in that slot at all. This is the least late night thing.
It's got bare breasts in the very first episode, which is that's late night like for 1998.
True, I just feel like that could have easily been avoided. I don't think, because I expect way more adult humour. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't what we got.
The story follows the adventures of teenager Shu on an Earth ravaged by climate change in the now optimistic future year of 2187. And this first aired 18th of May, 1998. What were Greg and Anthony watching? Let's find out.
At 2 a.m, nothing.
No. So, on this day, early in the morning, you had a bunch of CBBC on BBC Two before you went to school. Yeah. You could have been watching Teletubbies.
I would have been.
Tom and Jerry Kids.
I'd
have been watching that, yeah.
Yogi's Treasure Hunt.
Possibly that.
I can't remember the different Yogis, but I liked Yogi Bear, so.
A repeat of Blue Peter.
Probably.
Teddy Trucks.
I tell it, a kid's show.
It is a kid's show. By this point, by Blue Peter, you should have been headed to school. The remaining two.
Oh, that was playing truant.
Exactly. And Harry and the Hendersons.
Nice. That's a good book. I mean, I was always very fond of Teletubbies well past my age. I've mentioned this before. So I would have reluctantly or pretended that I wasn't enjoying it, but really I found it quite, whether it was therapeutic, I don't know, but I watched it.
I see. I've never seen Tom and Jerry Kids. I have seen Yogi's Treasure Hunt, and it's tolerable watched half awake this early in the morning. Because before it was on BBC, it was on GMTV. So I remember watching that before I went to school, earlier in the 90s.
Yeah, I wasn't very much of a Teletubbies inclined kid.
Didn't you like about Teletubbies? What's not to like?
I was always at school by the time it was on.
This was 7 a.m. You get to school at 7 a.m.
Breakfast.
Club. Oh no! Wait, no. Oh, I'm looking later on down when it's on at 10 o'clock again.
You can never escape Teletubbies.
I wouldn't. I don't know. I just wouldn't have been watching it. Wouldn't have been my thing.
You need to be more open minded, Greg, and you would have enjoyed it.
Then in the afternoon, on BBC One, you could have watched Play Days, where it's the Y-Bird stop. You could watch Romald the Reindeer.
Oh, that was
Romald.
Romald. I've never seen
it. Romald the Reindeer. Yeah.
You could watch Hubbub, starring Les Bub, the mime. I've not seen that. I have seen Les Bub in concert. Is it really concert when it's a mime when there's no sound at all? I've seen him perform live. The 90s Casper cartoon.
I probably would have watched that.
A kids game show called 50-50.
Definitely watched that, but I can't remember. I know that icon, the logo is just ingrained in my brain, but I don't know what it was.
It puts two teams of 50 randomly selected 11 and 12-year-old school children against each other in physical games and general knowledge quiz.
Okay.
So it's like the early version of Battle Royale.
50-50. Yeah, that was. I would have watched that because I used to watch that because my this would have been around the time that my grandma was picking me up from school. So I'd have been going back to my grandma's house, and then my mum would pick me up when she finished work, and we'd watch all of this stuff at tea time at my grandma's. So yeah, I'd have been watching 50-50. I remember that very well.
What was for tea? Fish and chips, or
I don't know, spaghetti bolognese, probably.
Oh.
Yeah.
The winning team won a prize for their school, and in later series, a glass trophy.
That'd be good. Win the prize for your school, what, you know, what a nerd.
Other official merchandise was given to both teams for taking part.
You got your 50-50 t-shirt.
I guess so.
Meanwhile, on the other side, you could have watched Potamus Park. This appears to be some sort of live-action show with people in hippopotamus outfits.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
No, never seen that.
Caribou Kitchen. Any ideas?
No idea at all.
What any of these are?
The Adventures of Paddington Bear.
I like Paddington.
Okay, yeah.
I've the film fair version. None of the subsequent versions live up, apart from the live action film. Bimble's Bucket. I've never heard of Bimble's Bucket.
You've had me draw these.
You're making these up.
An entire channel of stuff I don't really know. I definitely didn't watch it.
House of Toons. I think that was just a whole bunch of Warner's cartoons in a. Package. Funhouse with
definitely
late 90s Pat Sharpe as opposed to early 90s Pat Sharpe.
Then I would have turned it off when they did the racing bit at the end. Kind of really liked that much.
And then The Big Bang with what's his name?
His name?
He doesn't want to be called Gaz Top, does he? Gaz Sharp, is that his name?
I did really like that though. That was a bit of a science-y thing, wasn't it?
I used to love like that. And How To as well, that kind of stuff.
Oh, How To was
Gareth Jones is what he prefers to be called.
So what's his real...
Gareth Jones is his real name, but when he first broke on TV, he was going by the name Gaz Top.
Why? But whatever he wants.
Because it was a cool name.
It was a name for TV, I suppose.
Like,
Gaz Top.
He was presenter of Get Fresh... was where I knew him from. 86, 88, the ITV Saturday morning show, I think.
I wonder what he's up to these days.
Well, I'm on his Wikipedia page, so let's find out.
Looks like he belongs in a band.
Nothing much since 2015.
I hope he's got some money saved up, because...
But maybe just no one's updated his Wikipedia. That could also be the issue, because I'm sure of...
Oh, yeah, this fella.
Yeah. Oh, he's done stuff on the One Show and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always liked Gaz Top. He was...
yeah.
He was good.
Yeah, same here. Like, spans generations.
Yeah.
UK number one was... All Saints with Under the Bridge and Lady Marmalade. From what I remember, it was only the Lady Marmalade track which was getting played on the radio.
With that, that's not... The Lady Marmalade I'm thinking of is Christina Aguilera and...
You are, yes.
The Squad. But I don't remember there being an All Saints one.
Yeah, I don't remember an All Saints version of it.
Is it the same song, is this?
Yeah, it's the same song. And the Under the Bridge is the Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Yeah, yeah. Covers all round. Come on, All Saints.
I know their cover of Under the Bridge very well.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Good. Maybe it was Under the Bridge which got played the most. I guess because this CD tells us that it had the Under the Bridge video. And you put the CD in your computer. You could watch a tiny QuickTime movie.
Yeah, that's tech. That must have been a new thing for that.
It was relatively around this period.
Yeah, there was this whole thing where action figures used to come with CDs as well. Like, they used to come with, like, little discs in the blister pack that you could put in the computer, and you would get, like, some little mini thing about the toy. Like, certain, I think certain Transformers toys used to do it. I don't know. I don't know what planet I'm on right now, whether I'm even making sense to anyone.
See, I don't even know if I was old enough. I don't think I had a computer at this age. I can't remember when I first got a computer.
I didn't have a computer at home probably until a year or so after this.
So you were sneaking into the school library to put on Under the Bridge by All Saints on the video.
Yeah.
I don't know why the PowerPoint became unanchored in OBS or how long it had been unanchored, but... I've re-anchored it again.
But I didn't want to say anything.
We should have said something.
I didn't know if you wanted it there, you know.
No, of course I did.
You might have wanted it off.
Okay. So back to DTA Tron. Let me just tell you who made this thing. Our episode is called Out of Datania, or Datania. And it's directed by Tetsuro Amino, who we ran across doing Galot on an earlier episode of The Animated Makers, also probably best known for Macross 7. Screenplay is by Hideki Kakinuma, best known for Galforce, and character design is by Ryo Tanaka, who we've run across on Virtua Fighter, and they were also the chief animation director. And our cast, such as it is Sachiro Hoshi as Shu, who's best known as Kira Yamamoto in Gundam Seed, but we may have seen him more recently as Lightning Max on One Punch Man. Our opening theme is Hiwamata Noboru Kuri Kaisu by Dragon Ash.
Which is very good. A very good song.
New metal band who debuted in 1996. They also did the Virus Buster Surge opening around this time.
It is a great opening theme.
I think it's a really good song. It's done. Yeah. I was like,
and the ending theme is Adachi Hoshi by Jungle Smile, who are the duo of Ikudo Takagi and Asayo Yoshida. They debuted in 1994. They also contributed a theme to Super Gals in 2001. They went on hiatus in 2002, but have occasionally reappeared since then. I'm going to say this may be a generational gap in opinions on that Dragon Ash opening.
Really?
Yes.
The ending theme lets it down, but that Dragon Ash opening is really good.
Well, I think I prefer the ending theme to the opening.
Oh, really?
So, Anthony, tell us all about what happened in your pick.
All right.
DTA Tron, Out of Datania.
I'll tell you, I've got a quick question, though. On the PowerPoint, is that actually something that occurs in the series later down the line?
Oh, yeah, that's DTA Tron himself.
Oh, gosh. Don't get that far here.
This is very much like those mecha shows we've watched where they don't get to any what the show's about in the first episode.
Well, I'll preface this again by saying I expected something very different.
Yeah, I'd got it mixed up with Dual Parallel Adventures.
Yeah. So I think because of that, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than what I maybe should have done. Anyway, great opening. Even if the rest of this show is terrible, 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 at least the opening's really good. So, opens up with a boy who we find out later his name is Shu. I might as well tell you that now. He falls to the floor in this like a run-down city. It's like a typical apocalyptic scene. Shit's gone on. There's even like a beached tanker in shot in the background. It's the end of the world. And he doesn't know how he's got there, and he's running around, and there's like, I don't think the bird's chasing him as such, but it certainly feels like they might be. But he's falling around, he's falling into the sand, he doesn't know where he is, and then he sees the ocean, and he's starstruck by the ocean, presumably never saw it before properly. And a dolphin leaps from the water, and then he wakes up from his dream, and he is in Datania. And he's been awoken by his daily alarm clock, and he's at school. And it's this huge kind of facility-based school where all the kids, they're on like treadmill-style walkways, and there's hundreds of them, and they're all kind of stood, rigid, and which we'll get to later. And he's kind of normal looking, and he's like his movements are, as you would expect, I guess, a normal person as they're walking around and stuff. But all the others, they're like robots. And he knocks someone over, and he starts apologizing. And then his friend comes over, who's, I don't remember any of his friend's names, but his friend comes over and tells him, stop it, you know, carry on like nothing's happened. Just let it ride out. And it's obvious at this point, all the other students are basically like brainwashed shells, I guess. And all the students, they're all being monitored by these robots and this kind of patrolling scanner beam that must read their actions and potentially that, you know, tiny little inflections on like facial movement and stuff like that. And all the students are eating in unison, and I think they're eating like these weird, I'm sure they call them like a data
meal or something.
Meal, yeah, that's right, yeah. And the scanner's going past them all, and it stops on Shu as he's kind of struggling to chew this food down because presumably he doesn't like the taste. And it stops on him, and then it continues going as he pretends he's enjoying it and eating it normally. And then he runs off to the toilet, and he's thrown up his meal, his data meal. And his two friends come in the toilet to check on him. And so they're also kind of shaking their – I wrote down programming because at this point I don't really know. But they're kind of breaking away from this brainwashed state that that everybody else is in. And Shu's like, maybe I should just go through a reset. And then he's like, no. His friend's like, no, we've been – fooling all the adults for 3 weeks, and tonight's the night we leave. We escape tonight. And Shu isn't sure, and then the scanner comes in, and they all sit on the toilet, and so it fools the scanner once again. And I was really on board. Like I was like, oh, this is pretty good. This is way better than I thought it was going to be. And Shu isn't sure, and he goes to sleep. Then he's about to go to sleep, and there's like pod. And then he remembers his dream with the dolphin and like seeing the sea. And that's the thing that then triggers him to go meet his friends. And there's a big group of them, actually way more than I thought there was going to be, escaping. And they're like, oh, well, Shu's not here. Oh, we're going to have to go anyway. And Shu shows up. He's a bit late. That's fine. But they all kind of meet in this underground car park. And at this point, the scanner, obviously it's constantly scanning around at different spots. It scans their bed. Obviously it sees there's nobody there, and it says, oh, the alarm's going to trigger in 20 minutes. And then we get like an eye catch, and it's just a scene from later on in the episode. And I was like, well, I don't really want to know that yet. But anyway, you see the eye catch, which we'll get to the actual scene in a bit. And the group's going through the sewers. They're like, it's like a slow current at one point, and then all of a sudden the current gets strong. I think Shu loses his torch, and he's trying to get it down a metal grate or like metal bars where the current's running through, and the group find them. And at this point, the adults are aware, and basically there's this big kind of computer in front of this dude. What's the dude called? Nines, I think he's called. And there's this mysterious figure saying, yeah, you're going to be the one that you've got to get them back, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay. And Shu at this point is, all the groups kind of climbed along this pipe, like kind of like monkey barred along, I suppose. And the pipe starts to get hot, and he falls. But thankfully, his friends are there with they're all strapped up with a rope, and he narrowly survives. But he does. And then they finally reach the external wall, and they're trying to find a way out. And Shu sees this one of these sensor robots, and it's like, "Return, return." I don't think it actually says that, but that's the gist. And then one of the kids like, that's not a normal sensor robot. And then boom, 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 is a turret, and it's killing them. I'm sure like a few of the kids get killed, but I think they get references just punished, at least in one of the lines of subtitle. Anyway, it's havoc, and Shu slides down this slope, and he crashes through the floor, like a few layers of the floor, and he's in this really old, or what would be considered old, like an old bedroom, I suppose, or like a child's room, and there's like games consoles and toys. And he pries open this door, and he finds this water, and he's over the moon. It's basically the sea, and he's like splashing around and falling into the water and stuff. He's finally free, and then he spots this blue-haired lady having a bath, or, you know, I don't know, bathing or whatever, and she's totally naked, and she gives him a big whack, and then he wakes up from being knocked out, and he's got these group of people stood over him. There's the blue-haired girl. She's now dressed. There's like a dude with I don't want to say a flat top. Maybe there's a flat top. I don't really know. And then there's an orange-haired girl. Is it a flat top or is it just like a crew cut kind of thing? But anyway,
yeah, it's a
like,
flat top.
It's dyed blonde. It's like blonde, I think, on top
as
well.
May, Ayn, and Dolly.
Right. Okay. I don't even know if I'm so bad with names. They may have said them, but they're all like, this got to be a spy from Titania. Look at the way he's dressed. And the orange-haired girl, she's like, presumably the computery person. She's like scanning him and stuff, and he's got this text on his chest that they reveal. And just as they're kind of getting to the nitty gritty, they hear the sound of a vehicle, and they start fleeing. And it's the Detania troops, as well as that Nines dude. He's you know, he's come to get them back, and he takes them back. Shu's being, I guess, interviewed slash interrogated, and. And it's like asking him basic questions. He tells them that he left to see the sea when they ask why he left. They ask if he saw a group called the Returners, which presumably is the group that we've just seen. And he says no. They send him for the reset. And he sees his friends on the way, and they're like, oh, yeah, some of the other group got punished. And presumably it just means they're dead. Then he gets reset. And he, you see like his memories kind of fading away from his I guess his point of view, and that's the end of the episode.
Oh, but did he get reset? That's the thing.
I don't know, but I was surprisingly keen to know.
Aware the sight of boobs enough to prevent the resetting. Because that was one of the specific memories they showed him looking back up.
And it was the last one, I think, so maybe it was a trigger to kind of reset the reset or prevent the reset. But I really enjoyed this, like, way more than I expected. And nearby Brian, like, he just breathed in a way that says he didn't. But no, I was on board for this way more than I thought I was going to be.
I enjoyed it, but I don't think I would have enjoyed it as a 10-year-old kid.
Well, you should have been up at 2:45 in the morning.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I was surprised it was. Obviously, you do get the nudity, which I feel like it could have easily been avoided, and it would have been enough to kind of push it back into the realms of normal schedule. But I don't know where it goes with the show. I don't, because I was expecting like jokes and stuff or vulgarity, but there's not. It's serious from start to finish, really.
Yeah, it's kind of like this like young adult type story going on, like this coming of age story and this dying earth trope that I really enjoyed. I thought it was a bit depressing for I really enjoyed it now, watching it now, and it's something that I'll probably carry on watching, but as a 10-year-old kid, I mean, I wouldn't have been allowed to be up at 2:45 in the morning to watch it anyway, but B, like I can't see I would have been invested in it at all. I think it would have been too slow for me.
Because not a lot happens, really.
It doesn't really pop off, does it?
It's a series of events of them going through different bits just trying to escape. But the additional group, they look interesting enough. So then again, I wouldn't have... When a cartoon was on at that age, I probably would have just watched it regardless, so maybe I would have got into it because of that Returners group. Mm. They're a lot more interesting than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I might have watched it a little bit, but then I might not have... followed, you know, like I wouldn't have been annoyed if I'd have missed an episode of it or something.
No. Yeah. And how many episodes did you say this ran for?
Too many. 26. Can you believe it? 26.
Well, I can't even begin to imagine where it leads to, because I think it's a nice little setup.
Never been licensed in English. And when you think about all the 1998 shows which have... this didn't. I was like,
that's quite crazy.
I believe the DTH Trod is like a Captain Planet type figure who people can summon as the story goes along.
Yeah, I'm gonna picture him now. He's fighting werewolves and stuff.
Why didn't they show him in the first? Like,
I think it's a she. I think it's the blue hair girl, to be honest.
Yeah. Why don't they show DTH on in the first episode?
I don't think he's anybody. I think they like construct him out of.
Oh, is it not?
I think whatever molecules are nearby form him, from what I was reading.
Oh wow!
And I think it looks pretty molecules badass. Combine.
Oh yes, DTH on. Yeah, if.
Got yes. a red scarf.
If the knockoff Carbon Rider was in this in the first episode, I'd have been hooked. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but it's so slow, and the main character is so drawn to look like Shinji.
Oh, it's unbelievable!
Oh, yeah. The minute his face is on screen, you're like, "Is this Evangelion?"
Well, even his like figure and like shape of it, everything. It's yeah. Not by chance.
I got a little bit of Logan's Run off it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
A little bit of Paranoia, the role-playing game. But that's the worst thing about it, is it reminds me of Paranoia, the role-playing game, and then I just remember how much fun that is. And this isn't
compared to
fun.
How the show wasn't.
Yes. And the other thing, because the thing which I think is closest to scratching that itch for me is that... that short in the Animators Expo, the one with the council talking about what they think above ground's like based on all the various bits of pop culture they found.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was like, that's the tone I want from this sort of living in a dome, don't know about the outside world type of science fiction. And this is a little too, as you say, young adult, a little too young adult. And I don't think I ever rang, even when I was a young adult, I don't think I ever wanted to read or watch things which had that tone.
Yeah, I mean, maybe for like Hunger Games generation or something, this would have been on point for them.
Yes.
But like for someone
too
like
early,
me.
Too early, you see. It's
yeah.
Ahead of its time.
Well, I mean, if I was 13, 14, I still don't think I would have been that on board with it. I think it would have been a bit slow for me even then.
They say it's only 2 years till Battle Royale, and the novel Battle Royale was 1999, so that's only a year after. So I think there's definitely that young adult thing going on at this time. But I'm too old to notice it, and you guys are too young to notice it.
Spartacus and the Sun Beneath the Sea is another one. Like this gave me vibes of that cartoon, if you've ever seen that.
I have not, no.
Oh. Well, I remember. I have very obscure memories of this cartoon. It's I'm sure it's a French thing, and I'm sure it used to be on Cartoon Network at one point, like early in the mornings or something. But
nothing about this looks familiar at all.
Yeah, it has a similar vibe to, because these guys come from like the world beneath the they're searching for like the world beneath the sea, which is like. Basically where everyone can still live because there's been some kind of great cataclysm or whatever. It's post-apocalyptic and stuff. And I don't know, for me, it had that kind of vibe. But, I mean, like, it's... Sometimes I look at this show, this Spartacus show, and I feel like I'm the only person that's ever watched it, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. The creators watched it.
Yeah.
Nah, it doesn't look like there's nothing about it. Like, not even any of the like the little creature characters look familiar, which is usually a bit of a standout. Just you, Greg? Maybe you were like lived in France for a little while and you don't realize.
Maybe, yeah. But like, I mean, I remember it, and my brother remembers the intro theme from it. If you play it to him, he's like, "Oh, I know that." But it's like something that would only have been on like early in the morning on
Cartoon Night Show, 2:45.
Yeah. Cartoon Network broadcast it.
If it wasn't Cartoon Network, it was Channel 4. But...
Yeah, I was pleased with this one. I think I watched this first for a change. I usually watch my own last, but I watched this first. I was like, "Oh,
yeah."
Here
see,
we go.
I was going to watch them in reverse order, and I didn't. And then I was kicking myself by the time I got to the end. talking of which, Super Yo-Yo, December 1st, 1998.
Yes.
Okay. Created at some point around 500 BC, the yo-yo is a toy involving two discs joined by an axle that is spun via hand by using an attached string. God, how would I not say string? The modern yo-yo debuted in 1928 when Pedro Flores opened the Yo-Yo Manufacturing Company in California.
It's this whole thing about yo-yos being marketed as a weapon, or that they were like derived from a weapon.
I think that's, that's entirely bullshit. But talking of yo-yos as weapons, in 1976, the popular shoujo manga Tsukuban Dekka debuted, featuring a delinquent schoolgirl turned undercover cop who fights enemies with a steel yo-yo. A live-action adaptation followed in the 1980s. In 1990, yo-yo celebrity Tom Kuhn, and dentist, as Wikipedia tells me, perfected the ball-bearing yo-yo, opening the yo-yo world up to more elaborate and complicated tricks. Then, in 1997, the manga Super Fast Spinner by Takashi Hashiguchi debuted in Korokoro magazine. It ran for 7 volumes, and in 1988 had an anime adaptation that ran for 22 episodes and was dubbed for a Singapore audience as Super Yo-Yo. That's the version we're watching today.
Yeah, and then in 2020, Greg watched this, went on Amazon and bought himself a yo-yo.
Well, to be honest, that seems like a good quarantine lockdown move. You can now look at this series, though, as a stepping stone for Takashi Hashiguchi's career, because before this he was doing gag manga. But then after this, he did his most successful series, Yakitate Japan, which was also like a contest tournament type series, but with bread rather than yo-yos. Another quarantine. Boy, this guy's got his finger on the pulse of things to do in quarantine. The series features... Did I put a picture of him in? I downloaded a picture of him. So there's the toys you can get. No, I did not get a picture of the Yo-Yo Master. The series features real-life Yo-Yo Master Kenichi Nakamura as a character. Though he's not...
So he's real!
He's not being voiced by him, yes.
He's real.
Oh, it gets better.
Yes.
Yeah. This gets better, I swear to God.
He now has bleach blonde hair.
Of course, that's the optical...
And the show follows 11-year-old amateur yo-yoist Shinichi Demoto as he tries to beat his rival Saito Hojin, which Wikipedia informs me is all he is also 11 years old. He's a very tall 11. Yes.
Yeah.
I think you can see he was real as well.
No.
No, he's not.
But as we couldn't do this at the time, what were Greg and Anthony watching? And what was I missing? Because I was at work. CBBC on BBC Two opened up with the little polar bear.
It's got very little eyes.
He does have tiny dots of eyes.
Dots.
Followed by those Teletubbies again. Followed by those Tom and Jerry kids again. Followed by Blue Peter again. Then you got Robinson Sucro. I think I have seen that.
Yeah,
I've seen that. That rings a bell.
Couldn't tell you anything about it.
No, but... I think I was just like, is this the same studio who did Albert the Fifth Musketeer?
It looks very similar.
Yeah.
Albert the Fifth Musketeer.
And was it? Or
I didn't look. I didn't do further investigation. But I think
I'm going to say yes.
I think whenever I saw it, that was my thought. Yeah, and Okie Doke, which was Cosgrove Hall, I do believe, one of their stop motion.
I watched a bit of that in my time. Don't think I liked it, though.
Isn't he the friendliest of blokes is Mr. Okie Doke. I think that's the theme song.
Something like that.
That was all topped off with the little polar bear again. The entire schedule was a little polar bear sandwich.
Yeah, because it's Christmas. Well, it's December at
December,
least.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then, in the afternoon, when you got back from school, it's the Y-Bird stop again at play days. Followed by Banana Man repeats. That was on when I was 8 to 11 years old.
I'd have been watching Banana Man.
Yeah, Banana Man's great. I've got the DVDs. It holds up. Chuckle Vision, where the lads are working on cars. Noah's Island. I think we've discussed this before as a cartoon.
Yeah.
We don't remember.
Yeah.
It looks awful. It'll Never Work. I think that's like another science show.
Don't recall that one.
And then an adaptation of the novel Aquila.
I watched that.
I remember that, yeah.
A spaceship from the past, can it change the future?
Neighbours.
And then Dave was, of course, yes.
Yeah.
And then on CITV, you had Wizardora. Though I'm not sure, in 98 whether it is this Wizardora, because I think Wizardora had finished, so it was just going to be a repeat.
Yeah.
Which I'd learned in researching this, is Wizardora does still exist, and that there was two Wizardoras. There was two separate streams. So there was the original Wizardora created by Oxford University Press. And then that was adapted into the TV version. But while they were making the TV version, Oxford University Press carried on making the video versions. And they still do. Mm. And they're used for like teaching English in as a foreign language. Then the singing kettle. You guys will have to explain what the singing kettle that. Is.
Not a clue.
Wolves, Witches and Giants. That's Spike Milligan narration, isn't it?
If I remember. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that one. That was good, that was.
I think whenever I saw that, I was like, I thought that was a thing I should like, and then when I'd watch it, I'd be like, oh, no, I don't like this. But then again, I'm now 23 years old, maybe I should be watching it. Zap, the television comic.
I used to like that.
Oh, yes.
I feel like that was, when did that start? Because I feel like
I just feel like it's been around forever in my childhood.
Yeah,
so.
January 1893.
Yeah. That used to be on before or after the real Ghostbusters, if I remember correctly.
I can't remember that much.
At one
I'll
point.
Take your word for it, though.
Back in the time when I used to watch CITV.
Then the Jumanji cartoon, which I've never seen. I've never seen the Jumanji.
I watched that.
That's good.
I've seen the new
Jumanji. It was good. Oh, good.
I've never seen the first one.
The Jumanji cartoon was good. That was the same people that made... I'm sure it was the same people that did Extreme Ghostbusters.
I think you might be right, and I think that may be why I never touched it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't like those character designs. And then a show called Out of Sight, which, as you can see, you can tell by the shutterstock all over the image. It's hard to find anything about this. The only footage I could find is the German dub of it. It did star your fella who's now playing the Master in Doctor Who when they were a child. I think it might be science fiction as well.
Well, it's called Out of Sight.
And it has a Doctor Who in it as well. Patrick Troughton, I think, isn't it?
I'm not surprised Patrick you Charlton, can't find...
Maybe one of his
not
sons.
Not surprised you can't find anything about it. It's called Out of Sight.
Well, that's the other issue. When you type it in, even when you put Out of Sight TV program, it's like, did you mean Karen Sisko, the TV show featuring the character from Out of Sight, the movie? Righty-ho. And our UK number one was Believe by Cher. Which
Bang
has
it.
Terrible... single sleeve that makes you think that someone scanned it in incorrectly, but no, apparently it's supposed to look like that.
Oh, that's dodgy. I did like that song.
Do you believe in life after love?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
God, it sounded like you touched the raw nerve.
Honestly,
there,
I really,
Greg.
Really did like that song. I thought it was a just big earworm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big earworm. I'm not sure that meant I liked it, though. I mean, those earworms in Star Trek 2 were earworms as well, but they weren't necessarily good.
I don't think I'd developed any, like, musical, like, preferences by that age. So I don't think I would have heard it everywhere on the radio and things like that, like in the car and all sorts. And I remember it would have been something that would have been just been everywhere. But I remember the very first song that I actually liked and probably bought the single of, which came way later, was Eiffel 65 Blue. Which was a couple
was
of years
good,
after that, wasn't it?
Good one, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to hear it again, but I think I liked it at the time.
Yeah.
Okay, Super Yo-Yo. Let's get into who made this thing. Our first episode is called An Encounter with a Yo-Yo, and it's directed by Takeo Kato, who did various Mega Man anime. Series composition is by Katsuyuki Sumisawa, most well known for Gundam Wing and Inuyasha. Character design is by Mitsuru Ishihara, who worked on many of the same Mega Man anime that Kato had worked on, and also Die Guard. And the voice of Shinichi Demoto is Chuck Powers. Who's done a lot of these English dubs for the Singapore audience. And I think there's some other thing of note. He's the director of an animated film called Ribbit, The Tale of a Frog with an Identity Crisis.
I'm going to say it's bound to be a frog, surely.
Oh, he was the voice director on the Odex English dub of One Piece. And on the Odex English dub of Detective Conan. So, we've also got an opening theme. Now, I'll say whatever else you want to say. I do think this is the best opening theme of all these shows. Someday Let's Go Together by Rob Down.
It's good. But I'm going to disagree with you. And I'm still going to say that DT Atron has the better opening theme.
Yeah, I can't really remember this yo-yo opening. So
it's a mainstay of convention discos.
It's not. But I did include it when we did our anime Anison Armageddon that time for those 98 shows.
Million years ago.
I've got memories of hearing it at a con.
Yes, that's where you were.
The party. Yes. But it might have just been that panel we did.
It was just that panel, yes. No one else is playing it.
No one's ever played it at a con in one of the AMV parties or anything.
I'm pretty sure no one would know about it unless I've told them about it. Or they're also the same sort of people who lurk looking for obscure things to watch on the internet. And I have no idea who Rob Down are. There's no information available. The ending theme is Future by Chiaki Nakajima. She debuted as a single artist this year, but this was her third single. She had previously been a member of the Nezumiku Club, an attempt at recreating the success of Onyanko Club, but with a mouse theme rather than a cat theme. She appears to have retired from entertainment after marrying DJ Fumiya of Rip Slime. So, Greg, tell us all about this encounter with a yo-yo.
So you've got this kid, Shuichi, and he's pretty much good at everything. So the story goes, like, he helps out all the different sports teams at the school when they need someone to fill in. Or to win a game, basically. Like the thing opens with him playing baseball and hitting home runs. So like he's just like incredible at everything. Everyone comes in for help. He's super popular, but he can't get passionate about anything. He's got nothing that grips his interest that actually has him like, you know, challenges him or gives him any kind of like gratification. And enter the yo-yo. So he's in class one day and his classmates are complaining because there's this bully who is beating people at yo-yo duels because he can do better tricks than them and he's taking their yo-yos as prizes after beating them. So he's not really kind of like that fussed about getting involved, to be honest. He's like, well, why did you let him take your yo-yos in the first place? You should have just, you know, you're stupid for letting him take your yo-yo. You should just buy a new one. It's a yo-yo. But he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand the passion. He doesn't understand that, you know, how important yo-yos are. Yo-yoing's life or death, as the end of this episode kind of illustrates. So he gets coerced into helping, and one of his other school friends lends him a yo-yo, which is a beginner's yo-yo. I can't remember the exact type of yo-yo, but it's a type of yo-yo you can buy.
Was it a Russell H or something? Or
that's it. Yeah, I went down the rabbit hole with this show, like for yo-yos, and I was like looking at like all the different. It's like these are real yo-yos. These kids are using real yo-yos, and the you know like actual yo-yo masters are in it and things like that. And I was like, I went deep down the rabbit hole with this because of yo-yos. But so he then decides he takes the yo-yo home, and it basically his aversion to yo-yos apparently stems from the fact that he won a yo-yo as a kid at a fair and hit himself in the face with it and he never tried ever again. So he borrows this yo-yo and he starts practicing tricks in his bedroom and decides that he's not going to let the yo-yo beat him because he's getting annoyed because he can't do it. And then he turns up for this yo-yo duel and it's this explosive action. You know, like in the only the way that sports anime can make something like a yo-yo intense and you know, make you kind of like on the edge of your seat kind of thing. Like
sheets.
Yeah, edge of your sheets. It just completely like, yeah, like the only in only a way that sports animes can, like when they get right into the minutiae of like what yo-yos are made of and how each yo-yo works and the mechanics of the yo-yo and everything else, and this brand's better than this brand because you can hold a sleeper longer with it and things like that. And here's me, like my face like a centimeter from my screen, just like, wow, this is fantastic watching this yo-yo battle, them doing all these tricks, and like there's like skill levels and everything. Like this comes up in the show, like apparently there's basic rank 3 is probably what I was when I was a kid when I used to play with yo-yos, because like yo-yos was a big thing I think around the time that this dropped in like in Japan. Yo-yos was a big thing everywhere as far as I can remember. Like I used to have a yo-yo and I used to do tricks with it, and people used to bring yo-yos to school and stuff like that. So I don't know why this didn't get localized, because it would have been something that would have sold yo-yos like all over the world. But yeah, it sold a yo-yo to me because I went and bought one after watching it. But he wins the duel anyway.
How much did you spend on this?
$15.99.
Oh, bloody hell, Greg.
Yo-yos aren't cheap, man. But I bought one of the ones that they talk about in the show.
So the show really definitely works.
Yeah.
I bought a Yomega Fireball transaxle yo-yo, which apparently is good because you can hold a sleeper for longer with it, because it's good for beginners. So you can pull a sleeper and you can hold the sleeper for longer, and because of the way that it works, you could probably win a sleeper battle pretty easily with it.
We'll test it out next time I see you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'm basic rank 3. By the next time I see you, I might be a higher rank ask you, you know, we might have to like
unless you can split the atom. Not interested. Not that I can.
I used to be able to do a few different tricks. I don't know if I still can, but we'll see when my yo-yo arrives. I probably can't. I'll probably end up breaking a light fitting or something. But I used to be able to do like round the world. I could do the elevator, which is the one where you get the yo-yo to climb back up the string after folding the string kind of thing. I could do the sleeper. I could do walk the dog. And I could do the one with the rock the baby where you make the triangle and the yo-yo rocks in the middle. Yeah. I probably only managed to pull that off successfully like 4 times. But
that's an easy one. That's a really... I'm sure that's like...
I used to find that was the hardest one I could do, I think, doing that. Because like bending the strings while you're like holding the yo-yo.
I mean, don't get us wrong. I don't think I had much better on my roster of tricks, but I never struggled with that one, Greg.
Yeah, that was the one that used to get me. That was... Couldn't do that one very well. But yeah, this yo-yo anime was hype.
It really was.
Yeah. And that's basically it. It's literally like your typical sports anime kind of thing where they take something that's, you know, like something like if you're watching... I find watching sports mundane and boring, but I can watch sports anime because they put like actual like explosive action and everything else into it. You know, they make it... They make it interesting by getting into technique and making it intense and high stakes and everything else, you know. So, yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I never got yo-yo jacked at school, though. So,
say that again. You got yo-yo jacked.
I never got yo-yo jacked at school, but we used to do the sleep. We used to actually do the sleeper thing, you know, where you would do the sleeper with the yo-yo and see how long you could hold it.
Yeah.
We used to do that. I don't know whether that's like a thing that's just, but like the sleeper battle was a thing, like when I was at school, I'm sure it was. But yeah, we never used to take each other's yo-yos though. You wouldn't lose your yo-yo if you lost. But yeah.
Yeah, I was super excited by this and I was like,
yeah.
Even though I knew he was going to win, I was still excited.
Yeah. And this kid taking on one of the top yo-yo guys, taking on one of the top spinners, like at the end of the episode. Like, he's a little bit too big for his boots, isn't he?
Well, that's
thinking that. Just because he won a sleeper battle that he can beat a guy with a ponytail and a case of yo-yos. I mean, come on.
I believe that's the point. He's gonna learn some humility and don't go around insulting yo-yo masters. But yeah, it looks like that the real guy is like a recurring character, like training them how to be better yo-yoists, and obviously you at home as well.
Yeah. Well, there's like loads of YouTube videos you can find where there's people teaching you how to do yo-yo tricks and stuff. So
I went and actually looked at someone doing Split the Atom. I'm pretty sure it was it. And it's so hard to follow. He's like yo-yo finger and like all the terminology you would need to pick up, but it's not easy to follow something that occurs in 3 seconds. So I'll not be doing that in a rush. But yeah, I had a yo-yo, big fan as a kid of yo-yos.
I got a yo-yo just before the ball bearings came in, and maybe I'd have enjoyed it more if I'd just waited a couple more years and got but then I would have looked really foolish as a 14, 15-year-old with a yo-yo at school. I think peer pressure might have discouraged me from yo-yoing.
You were saying to me before the show, ask you, that you nearly bought a yo-yo after watching this as well.
Oh, yeah, and I totally nearly went down that road of buying it. Seriously, because I used to have a one called a Pro-Yo, and it was one of the wooden ones that they reference in the show. Mine didn't have like a clutch or whatever they refer it to as, but good times with the yo-yo. Everybody at school had them, then I think they got banned because people were using them as a weapon. Like, you know, big kids being kids, hitting each other with yo-yos and stuff.
People weren't hitting each other with them at our school, but some kid accidentally must have got hit by them or something because they banned them. Like, I think someone was doing a trick and they swung
around the world,
hit someone in the face. Yeah. And that's the end of that. And it teacher's like, right, no more yo-yos. Mine wasn't that fancy, the yo-yo I had as a kid. Like, I didn't have because there was these yo-yos that were like, you were saying, like 10, 15 pound a pop, like they still are. But like when I was a kid, my yo-yo was only like, I'm sure because there was a time when they were selling them at the corner shop.
Yeah.
For like a quid each, and you could just buy, and you could, they had them in like on the counter next to the stickers. And I'm sure I went and got one of them, and it was like a cheap version of one of the ball bearing yo-yos. So it was like a cheap knockoff ball bearing yo-yo thing. I have one of those. Yeah.
It was the craze, I think I mentioned when I was at school, where it was another one which was mirrored by an anime, which was the mini 4x4 Tamiya models. I can't remember the name of the anime, because there was a subsequent one, which is Let's and Go, which would have been around your generation, but there was one in the 80s as well. And it matched, when I discovered it, I was like, oh, that's exactly the time everyone was getting them at our school, completely unaware that there was anime, but the anime was definitely on the boxes. So that was matched by the anime, and then the other one was Street Hockey, which did not have an anime to go with it.
Should have done.
Lots of people street hockey in the third year of secondary school. Doing that with their inline skates and trying to play it in the playground. I don't know whether that got banned as well. It wouldn't have been that many people that needed to be banned, but much for that, but I think someone did take a locker apart with with one of their street hockey sticks because he thought there was a bomb in somebody's locker.
How old was, like, was that a genuine, there's a bomb in the locker, or was it?
I think a genuine.
Like, how old, what age were we talking here?
We are talking 13, 14.
Did you go to school in an anime? There's a bomb in the locker, so I'm going to take it apart with
now, this is the same,
with a hockey stick.
This is the same person who brought Ninja Throwing Stars to school, so that's the sort of person you're dealing with.
I'd have been their friend at that age, but not like now. It's just scary.
you'd be his friend, and then you like borrow a ninja star off him and go home, and then your mum's like, "What are you doing with a bladed ninja star?"
Where did you get that from?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that off that Greg boy?
Yeah. Why am I the kid with the ninja star?
Oh, come on, Greg. Don't pretend you know. Well, see, I've had a few games banned when I was in school, like that I created as well. I created the Men in Black game. It was my idea. And it was like Men in Black versus aliens. Nothing too brutal, but other kids started hearing about this game. They'd play their own rules, and then it got banned.
How does this game work?
Yeah.
Just, it would basically be two teams. And there was no kind of fighting involved. It was kind of just like a game of tag. It was just a pop culture game of tag or tiggy. We used to call it tiggy, which is a very northern thing to call it, which I've had this discussion with people before. But
we called it tig.
Yeah, yeah. We was it was tiggy. But yeah, for those who were listening, tag
tig for me as well.
Oh, you two tigs, right?
I think that's an East Midlands.
Yeah. Yeah,
but top and bottom of it, one team was the Men in Black, the other team were the aliens. Men in Black would chase after the aliens, but I'm sure I remember if you were in had the numbers advantage of an alien, you could take one of the Men in Black down, or like, you know, you would fight back. Oh, it was great stuff. Great stuff. How have I never mentioned this before? I'm sure I must have mentioned
this. You've never mentioned it before.
10 years or so we've been doing
entirely
this.
Entirely new information.
We used to play a game called Manhunt, which sounds fairly similar.
Yeah, I mean, you could copy it to any... I mean, kids are probably doing it now with... What's in now? Fortnite games in school? I don't bloody know.
Yeah.
The good old days.
I was less enamored with the show than you two. But at the same time, I did like some of the ridiculousness. I did like the ridiculousness of the guy at the end with his suitcase full of yo-yos.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because I was mentioning to Greg before we realized it was on Skype. Carlo, he's never been on the show, but Carlo, a friend of ours, leaving a con one time, we had to go past his parents' place. He was driving, so I'd rather have not have done, but he's a driver. And we went there, I was waiting in his room, and I was like, oh, what's in the case? And it was yo-yos. He, when he was younger, he used to do a lot of yo-yo stuff, and he had this exactly like it is in the show, the case with the foam circles to fit them in. So totally legit. This has got facts in it, this show. This is as real as it gets.
That's what I mean. It's, yeah, it's grounded, but at the same time, it makes it exciting, like super exciting.
Yeah, because the kids join in. Kids at home can do the shit in the show.
You can sit there trying to do the tricks while you're watching it, and then put the yo-yo through the TV and have your dad shout at you. That's great.
I bet that's happened.
Could you even put a yo-yo through a modern TV screen? It would probably just knock the TV over now instead.
you could probably damage the LCD screen, couldn't you, if you hit it?
Oh, yeah. There's got to be something there.
Keep us updated, Greg.
I will. I'll let you know if I end up trashing my TV. Sophie will lynch me if I do that.
So, what of these three shows would we pick to send back in time to our 8 to 11 year old selves and say, "Here, kid, get a load of this"? I'm going to pick Zillion because I didn't like the other two. That was the easiest choice I had.
Chocoso Spinner, definitely. If I was going to give this to... Well, actually, you know what? 10-year-old me would have enjoyed Zillion as well. But I think because of what was going on at the time at school and everything, with like yo-yos being a thing, I think Chocoso Spinner.
Oh, it's got to be Super Yo-Yo, 100%.
Yeah,
Like, I love Beyblade when Beyblade was a thing. So this is Beyblade Light.
Yes, it is. It only lasted 22 episodes.
Beyblade for real people.
And it had a really weird airing schedule as well, where it was only like air 2 episodes a month or something. So while there's only 22 episodes, it took almost an entire year to air. So.
Wow.
I was discussing with Sophie earlier, Askew, about yo-yos and yo-yo mania. And she was saying that at her school, when she was a kid, there was kids that had yo-yos that looked like Beyblades.
Wow. She's from Hungary, by the way, for those who... Listening.
Yeah. So it's like half Beyblade, half yo-yo. That sounds really rad.
That sounds dangerous. No, that sounds dangerous.
But it sounds like, imagine like a yo-yo that's got like kind of a Beyblade look about it.
Oh, like, yeah, the plasticky one. In that regard, yeah, yeah, because yeah, the Beyblade designs were always very,
yeah,
you know, you pick your Beyblade based on the design and the, what were they yeah called, the spirit monsters inside them? Bay beasts or something?
Something like that. My brother had a huge toolbox full of them because he was a big Beyblade kid. Because it was like his childhood, not mine. So he used to have like a toolbox, like one of my dad's old toolboxes. That
what do you mean his? You're the same age as me, pretty much, Greg. How could it not have been in your?
Well, it was, but I don't think I was playing with Beyblades like he was, like, because he was going to school. And he was like obviously a school below me still, and they were taking Beyblades to school and playing with Beyblades at school and stuff. And then by the time, I think I was probably 14 by the time Beyblade was on Cartoon Network.
Same. I wasn't too old for it. I was that kid at school.
I watched it, but I didn't bring Beyblades to school and play with them at school and things like my brother would. And I didn't own any Beyblades. I just used to play with my brother's Beyblades at home with him. So he had this like big sort of like toolbox arena thing full of Beyblades. Yeah.
Did you have the arena?
He did, yes. He had that rubbish plastic arena that cost way too much money for what it actually is.
Yeah, they were expensive for that stuff. Yeah. I used to use a dog bed.
We used to use a wok as well.
A wok?
Yeah.
That's a really good one, actually. That is really good.
Because they use a wok in the show, in one of the episodes. So we decided we were going to start using my mum's wok.
Yeah, that's a really good one, actually.
Yeah.
There you go. Dog beds and woks.
Yeah. Can Beyblade in anything as long as it's a concave.
A bath and a push.
Circular and concave, yeah.
Thing is, they need a good, you know, they need that gravity pull to pull them in together.
Yeah.
So a bath wouldn't be ideal.
So if you're looking for yo-yos on Amazon, I guess I should be looking for laser tag things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to buy a
Just Beyblade. Be shooting myself.
Well, you could set up a kind of shooting gallery. Oh,
that's
true. You could
yes.
have, yeah.
John Wick in his his house during lockdown.
Well, I was thinking more Brian in his back garden, but like the opening of Point Break, where Keanu Reeves is doing the shooting gallery.
That's very kind of you to think I could afford a place with a garden in Oxfordshire.
Well, you can use the local park.
That's true.
You know.
Rightio, let's wrap things up. Greg, do plug Ace Comicals for our listeners.
Yeah, so if you like your cartoons on paper and static, then we like moving cartoons too. But yeah, I mean, if you like cartoons on paper and static, then you can come over and listen to the podcast Ace Comicals at www.acecomicals.com, which is like the hub for everything we do. So go check it out.
Anthony, where can people find you dying repeatedly in Sekiro?
Hey, my runs are getting better, but you can find it on Twitch, which is AntAskew. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, that is also AntAskew.
And yes, you can find me on Twitch at Let's Go Brian and on Twitter at Awesome_Engine. If you want to see us stream Let's Go, we do that over on YouTube at Let's Go JoJo Show. So yeah, that will be when are we doing that this week? Actually, it doesn't matter because this episode will come out far later than. So I've no idea what we're doing that week when you hear this. Otherwise, we'll be back here next time with, I do believe, Samurai Champloo. That's the plan. Marv, yep. And 6 episodes of Samurai Champloo. My Blu-ray has arrived. Hopefully I don't already own the Blu-ray and I now own 2 copies. I couldn't remember. And I wasn't going through all my boxes to find out. I was like, cheap enough if I've bought it twice. C'est la vie. Otherwise, we'll be back there then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, I was going to say, Brian, I don't own Samurai Champloo, so if you do, it does turn out you've got to, I'll buy it off you.
That would involve me going to the post office. That ain't happening anytime soon.
Yeah.